Welcome, welcome, welcome to the new podcast, Warranty Intel by Aquant. We've had the pleasure of talking to so many leaders in the field of warranty and service. What we've heard from you is that warranty and its role in business strategy is changing. That's why we're bringing in top names in the industry to address your continued questions in an evolving warranty world. We've turned to the experts to explore everything related to the next generation of warranty. We'll be covering extended warranty, service contracts, claims processing, warranty as a service differentiator, management strategies, and everything in between. Edwin Pack, VP of Product Marketing and Business Development at Aquant, will be your guide through it all. On today's episode, we have Taj Mian, Business Development Director at Domestic & General. Taj discusses keys to remaining a consistent part of a retailer and consumer's value chain, loyalty models and extended service plans, transitioning that phrase extended warranty into continuous viewing pledge, success with multiple continued short-term retention programs that emphasize growth rather than just mere retention, keeping the consumer using a product with minimum disruption, the importance of simple online solutions, and so much more.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us today in this episode of our amazing warranty podcast. I have the pleasure to be joined by Taj Mian from Domestic & General. Taj, thank you so much for joining us today.
Absolute pleasure. Happy to be here.
Taj, I think what we're going to talk a little bit about today is really around the concept of how loyalty and the impact that warranty can have on loyalty. But before we dive into this specific topic, love for our listeners to have an understanding, get a little bit of understanding of your background and what you do for Domestic & General, and you know, what is Domestic & General about as well?
Sure, thanks. I'm happy to. Yeah, so as said, I'm Taj. I work for a UK company called Domestic & General, and we're extended warranty specialists. I've been in the extended warranty industry for about 30 years, and all the time being working with domestic appliances, heating, etc. My role within Domestic & General is business development. So I'm responsible for telling our story, meeting new friends, new clients in new territories and new channels across our marketplaces, of which the US is our latest market. We're planning our launch in 2021. We already have our launch partners lined up, so we're really excited about bringing our model to the US. We currently are based in the UK, and we work in France, Spain, Italy, Portugal, Belgium, Netherlands, and in Australia too.
That's great. So Taj, and I know that's something that, you know, moving over to the US and talking a little bit about some of the, you know, really what I consider to be amazing thought leadership around the concept of warranty and how it impacts customer loyalty. You know, as we go through this, one of the questions I like to ask all of our guests is, you know, first and foremost, what was the first ever interaction you had from a consumer standpoint with this idea of a warranty? Was it with a particular type of product? And how was that experience? Because I think it's something that helps kind of frame the conversation of how much it's evolved probably since the first time you ever had that type of interaction. So I was just curious to kind of get your first personal story around warranty.
Absolutely. It's a little bit strange for me because I started working in the warranty business before I was old enough to own any of my own appliances. So my first experience was as an employee, and I started in claims management, so as a claims assessor within the brown and white goods extended warranty department of the business that I worked in. So I was aware of the product and its nuances before I had enough money to go and buy my own washing machine, boiler, or TV. So I could see what it was doing and how it was running and what it was delivering for our partners and for us, and could see the use that consumers were getting from it. But it wasn't until I had my own home and was owning these appliances that I was, you know, experiencing what the user experience was like, if you like. So I guess the first time for me would have been a boiler. I think it comes into sort of heating and ventilation sort of category for you guys over there, but our boilers, we have combi boilers here, which provide the hot water and the heating for our homes. There is a huge industry around service contracts there. And the thing that I found with that is that they are sold as a hygiene factor, but they're not actually delivering value. And in fact, after a period of time, your utility, it's so old we can't service it anymore, even though you were still paying for the privilege of it. So there was a real gap between the promise that was being made and the service that was being delivered. But that was kind of the norm. Yeah, it was just the way it was. You know, we can all think about times when we've looked at insurance terms and conditions and realized we haven't bought what it is we thought we were getting. And that's how some forms of insurance have developed reputations over the years, because you don't always get what you think you're getting. And that's something that we have taken into our business at Domestic in General over a long period of time, because we firmly believe that, and if I just give a bit of context, Domestic in General, we don't sell direct to end consumers. We sell through retailers or manufacturers or utilities. So we're a B2B2C business. And we very much see ourselves as keeping our clients' promises at that moment of truth. And it's not until you look into, what are the promises that our brands would like to make to their consumers that you really think, hang on, an old-fashioned ESP product just isn't fit for purpose for keeping your promise. So that was the beginning, if you like, the light bulb moment of how we changed our business and moved away from the old-fashioned extended warranty product to our loyalty model that we have today.
Oh, that's great. And Taj, just for our listeners, ESP, you're talking about extended service plans, right?
Sorry, I was trying to look knowledgeable with the US language of ESP or ESA. We just call them service contracts for extended warranties in the UK. But
okay, great. No, not a problem. Just in case someone gets a little mixed up with the acronym, right? So, sure. So no, that's really amazing. So given that, and kind of moving to this type of loyalty model,
yeah,
could you dive a little bit into kind of what the evolution of that customer expectation or that customer relationship has been over the last few years? I think one of the things that we see as a common theme across the board is, customer expectations have significantly changed over the last 5 to 6 years for any number of reasons, buying habits, how you're able to procure, a lot of these products that exist today. And as a result, it's really made a significant change in what customers expect and that the type of behavior that they're seeing. So I'd love to get your perspective on what you've seen in that evolution over the years that you've kind of seen this warranty and this concept of warranty and service contracts play out.
Sure. It all starts with the fact that most of these service contracts or warranties in both our markets are generally sold at the point of sale through retailers. And the retailer is selling a fixed-term product that ends before the actual useful life of the appliance ends. Yeah. So you're charging consumers to protect a period of time that, yes, there is huge value for consumers to protect those 5 years of usage, but it automatically assumes that after 5 years, the consumer stops using the product. And in fact, it's the opposite, because consumers are still using those products, and actually they're more likely to fail and need attention in years 5, 6, 7, and 8 than they are in years 2 to 4. So there's this sort of incongruent behavior around what the retailer or the manufacturer wants, which is to sell more products, and the consumer that wants to buy a product at the right time. So if you have a fixed term warranty product, it's basically down to luck if the customer's buying cycle happens to be in sync with the retailer's selling cycle, i.e. at the end of that contract. So we realized there was a gap there, and but by offering some flexibility to consumers to renew their plans and retain their plans, you would have a better chance of having that repeat business from them in the future, because you were still relevant to them in year 8 or 9 as opposed to just in year 5. So that's one of the skills that we developed was, how do we turn a fixed term contract that expires after 5 years into an ongoing relationship? And of course, we've run all kinds of renewal, what we'd call just a renewal program or a straightforward retention program, but they're very expensive to run, because your conversion rates are generally much lower, and you've got a high cost of acquisition because you're having to direct mail these customers or telephone them to get them to re-engage. And many of them had forgotten they'd even bought this warranty because it was sold as part of a finance plan at the point of sale by a retailer. Yeah, so there were a number of gaps in the value chain. Customers didn't really know they had it. Therefore, how could they value it? It didn't last as long as their product. And there was no communication from day one to 5 years later. So it seemed that it was really designed just to make money rather than to add value. And of course, we're all businesses, so we want to make some money. But the key to making money consistently is by having a product that consumers value and being part of their value chain for longer. And that way everybody wins. So we realized through our renewal programs that, yes, we were getting some success, but it was still a costly exercise. So we started by moving away from long-term contracts to just single-year contracts, which we were doing through monthly payment mechanisms. So it was essentially a one-year contract that you could pay for in installments. And the conversions were very good. And the retention was very good because it was a tacit renewal process. You didn't have to collect customers' details again. You could just continue with it. But it was still the same product. So what we then realized was, okay, so how do we get more customers on board? How do we link it to the customer experience? And so we just moved our model to a monthly pay model. And it's essentially an indeterminate approach. So we want customers to be able to protect their washing machine, their boiler, their TV, their devices for as long as they want to protect them. Because that way, we're giving them real value and we are helping our clients to be there at the moment of truth when the consumer's ready to replace the product. And that comes down to the difference between just having a retention program and having a loyalty program. And they're the things that we've really been focusing on in the last couple of years.
Honestly, that's really amazing. I think the way that you summed it up in terms of the way people think about warranty, to your point, is, you know, there is a decision point made at the point of sale, and maybe at the end of that warranty, you're going to try to get a renewal out of them. But at that point, so much time has passed, they don't even know if they got any value out of that initial purchasing of that service plan.
Right.
It almost sounds like, you know, you're paying for something that remains in your mind to a certain extent, knowing that, you know, going month to month, if I'm paying this month, I know I'm going to be covered for that next month. And you continue to build a relationship that makes it a little bit more closely aligned to the way the customer can see the value versus just immediately at the point of sale, to your point. And I think that's really fascinating because I'm assuming what you're seeing from a lot of your customers and your customers' customers is, a major shift in kind of that behavior for the better.
Totally.
Right.
Totally. But I think, you hit on a couple of really important points there, because if you move into a monthly, pay monthly world, you have to be brilliant every month. Yeah. Customers will leave you. And a lot of the things that we did, the traditional markets thought we were absolutely bonkers. And I don't know if bonkers comes across as a US word, but it means slightly crazy. Even our lawyers that we hired for the US, when we said we're coming over and this is how our model works, they said, guys, you're crazy. You're going to lose a lot of money. We said, yeah, we know, but for a purpose, because we're building a loyalty business and we're investing in it. We're not losing money. We're investing in it. So, for example, within our subscription plans, a customer can cancel any time, penalty free. And people say, that's a huge risk. What if they cancel? Well, they're only canceling if they're not getting value. So what it's done is it's made us and our partners and service organizations step up to deliver that promise every month, because, as I said, people will vote if we don't give them service. So it's made the whole ecosystem a bit more honest, because, as I said, you're only as good as your last month. And it's also then changed the dynamics of the relationships that we have between us and our partners. When we came to the US, we heard a lot of people talking about the insurance companies just being dumb underwriters for programs. And that's all very well and good. If you want an insurance company to take a risk and you're going to run the program, then you don't need them for anything else. But we're delivering a solution with our partners that it requires also the retailers and the manufacturers to up their game in customer experience. And all those things that we needed to happen, we realized we're all under that customer experience sort of umbrella. And it was tapping into a really strong, new direction from our partners to drive loyalty rather than just revenue. Of course, one comes with the other. But it was really about, no one wants to sell an extended warranty. They want to sell a solution and a service that they can create advocates and ambassadors of their products and people that will want to stay with them. It's a big difference between just having a renewal program, which if you think about it, a renewal program just stops the decline of your book of business. Yeah, it's a reaction to what's happened. Whereas a loyalty program is about growth. It's about turning those people that buy your products into people that will buy them again and again, as opposed to someone else's product. You know, it's wrong just to think about it as a retention business. It's actually complete opposite. It's about growth rather than retention.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I think to your point, you're going from a traditionally very reactive perspective on this to definitely more proactive and more value driven, right? And so,
yeah,
I'm very curious and love to kind of get your thoughts on, you know, we talked with a few other, you know, major manufacturers around this is, you know, outside of the service, because I think traditionally everyone's thought of a service plan as, oh, it's, you know, it's a form of insurance, right? Something bad goes wrong, then I just want to have the peace of mind to be able to call someone, right? And get that problem fixed for the most part, or to know that I'm covered. But really, when we talk about value beyond just kind of the reactive nature of that whole process and trying to communicate and position yourselves in a way that deliver other types of value, I'm curious, Taj, what's your perspective on that? Is that something that you also focus on? Because a lot of companies are trying to figure out, how do we create this relationship with our customer and that not only keeps the relationship and makes it one that is a continuous one to create that loyalty, but also to ensure that they're getting as well some of those key data points about what's going on in the field about their products to really then deliver that next product or that next level of experience and making sure that that service is aligned. So would love to get your thoughts on that.
Sure, absolutely. I mean, there are two things that spring to mind immediately, and they're slightly different. The first one is around relevance of the brand, retailer, manufacturer to what it is they're offering to consumers. Yeah. So if you make a washing machine and you sell it to someone, there is an absolute relevance to you wanting to protect the use of that and to make your customers' lives easier in the use of that product. But how to build a loyalty platform on the back of that, you need to then offer relevant additional service, whether it's, for example, we offer, you know, multi-plans, you know, which I think are quite common in the US, or kitchen plans through some of the utility providers who offer a whole home type approach. So if you're a manufacturer and you've got someone with one appliance and one service contract, because you're generally using third-party repair networks, there's no reason why you couldn't repair every product in that home. And there could be a real multi-brand home there, but you could actually, you could, by acquiring the customer through a service channel, you could end up with the first rights on product replacement on all that customer's appliances through delivering great service on the relationship that you have. So it is about, you know, working out what's a relevant adjacency to what the consumer wants to do business with you in the first place. And if it's about white goods, it's fairly easy to come up with other kitchen-related services that can support your loyalty program. If you're in the consumer electronics space, it's equally easy. And obviously with heating and home emergency, there's a number of areas that can be worked on. But all those things require investment, and they require you to start looking at your warranty program as a loyalty program, and therefore not as a drain. Yeah, one of the things that I talked about in my presentation, which we really feel strongly about, is that people have to, retailers and manufacturers have to stop looking at their loyalty programs as, or insurance programs as a cost and as a drain. You know, so many programs only make money if claims are rejected. That doesn't make any sense. Yeah, you're definitely not adding value to consumers if you really don't want to pay for the service that you've promised them. If you put barriers to use it, if you call out fees, extra labor costs, or, you know, things like that, that actually water down the service that you're offering your consumer. They're the things that are need to challenge and to take out of our vocabulary if we want to build loyalty. Because loyalty is about providing a lot more than just basic service for your consumers, but it can reap incredible results if you get it right. And that's what we are practicing every day.
No, that's great. You know, it makes me think about a couple of different things here. You know, first of all, with regards to this concept of warranty, and I'm very curious in the way that you're positioning yourselves and that you're talking about yourselves to your customers and your end customers. Really, I think maybe, you know, and I don't know if this is the case for yourself, but moving towards this type of a model, you're trying to shed a lot of the previous impression, the imagery, the assumptions that people have when they talk about warranty and service contracts and a lot of these things. Do you struggle with this in terms of getting people to understand that when we're talking about warranty, maybe it's about not calling it warranty anymore, right? Just because of some of the, I think some of the challenges and some of the ways that people think about it from a behavioral perspective, I would imagine that there's a lot that you need to do to kind of position yourselves in a way that people will understand that this is really truly the appropriate outcome that you're trying to achieve. Given yeah. kind of the old school, the old school way that, you know, a lot of companies have been doing it up to this point.
Yeah, you're right. And I think that it is a change of vocabulary and a change of culture and mindset. So, for example, we're domestic in general is a regulated insurance business, but insurance is the vehicle. Insurance is the principle and method that we use to be relevant to our consumers, to our partners and their consumers. You know, our manufacturing and retail partners don't care that we're an insurance company. They care that we are providing them with innovative solutions that allow them to form a meaningful relationship with their customers, and at the same time, obviously, generate revenue through sales, service, and repeat business. So we have to make sure that we are changing that narrative. And you know, if we a couple of the big examples we have done in the UK before with. We work with a lot of the sort of the cable TV type producers where I don't know how the model works in the US, but you subscribe to your package and it'll cost you, say, £100 a month to have all the movie channels and the sports channels and the bits and pieces. And the company generally provides the box that you need to view it for free, whether it's a satellite TV receiver or some kind of cable system.
Yeah, so they don't do it for free here. Just an FYI, they do charge us over here if you don't have the box already. So yeah, but continue on, please.
So they will charge for installation, but the actual unit belongs to the company. Yet still, we were able to sell service contracts to consumers on a box they didn't actually own.
Really?
Yeah, and it made us start to think about what is it that the consumer is actually protecting here, because if something happens to that box, they can just simply call up the provider and say, the box you've given me is dud. Can you come and fix it? But what we realized the consumer was protecting was use. In this case, it was continuous viewing. So that was the first time for this particular that we changed our terminology from extended warranty to continuous viewing pledge.
Yeah.
Okay. We did something similar with one of the gaming platforms. You know, why would you buy it? You know, extended warranty when it's the same price as the latest game. But so we were selling a continuous gaming pledge. Yeah. It's really about how we keep the consumer using the product with the minimum disruption. That is how it's one of the measures that the consumer will have for the reliance and the quality of the brand that they've bought. Yeah. Because consumers understand that things go wrong. How they judge that product is how quickly and how professionally the situation is put right. And the more opportunities you give to your consumers to put things right for them, the more advocates you'll create. Because people are not naive about the frequency that things break down in all walks of life. So there's no point in pretending we're creating a miracle product that never breaks down. It's how we react to that perceived breakdown that drives almost everything.
No, that's great. I love that story that you talked about, because you're in the end, you're guaranteeing the outcome, right? That's what you're trying to give to the consumer in the end, that, you know, it's not about the box. It's not about, you know, any particular product. It's about what they're using it for, right? If all of a sudden they want to make sure that when the football game is on, the telly doesn't just stop working, right? Because obviously that would be pretty bad. And so, you know, I love the idea and the fact that there was, you saw a market there and there was a response to that. And in the end, aligning it as closely to what the consumer is looking for is definitely, you know, I mean, I think that's a win-win for everyone in the end, right?
Absolutely. If you can afford, if I guess there's, if you can afford to it, afford to invest in it, then there is a win-win. And then the other half of that is if you can't afford to invest in it, then you're probably in the wrong business, because, or you're not going to last very long in terms of loyalty, because you, it doesn't just happen. Loyalty doesn't just happen. Which was, I didn't realize till just now, I called my presentation "What Makes Loyalty Happen?" Because it is a series of actions and behaviors that drive that. It's not chance or coincidence.
Yeah, no, that makes total sense. So, no, you know, that's great, Taj. You know, I really do love kind of that, the leadership and the perspective that you have around that, and really just the evolution of how this has transitioned from kind of this old, kind of tired way of looking at warranty into something that really is much more outcome-centric and focused on getting to the heart of what the consumer actually wants, right? Which is, they just want to be able to use their washing machine. They want to be able to use their boiler, right? And they want the, you know, the continuous and reliable service from that is effectively what they're paying for. It's not just about buying a boiler, right? It's not just about buying a washing machine. So,
I think it's the perception of that product within the retailer and the OEM also has to change, because it was seen back when I was younger. You know, the retailers would, they would put a lot of pressure on sales staff to sell warranties. Yeah. Because in some areas there was more margin in the sale of the warranty than there was in the sale of the product itself.
Yep.
So there was more pressure to sell rather than understand the value of the products. And of course that then creates a feeling in itself, you know, that there was many jokes around, you know, I went to a retailer and, you know, bought a warranty that I bought a TV at the same time. You know, it's because they're so focused on selling the warranty rather than the product. And I think that it ended up being a double whammy, where you were selling products very aggressively to retailers, to consumers at in retailers, and then protecting the margin by not wanting to actually deliver on the promise. So that's, you know, to your point earlier, that's probably what created some of the reputation around insurance, or this type of insurance, because, you know, other types of insurance always, you know, you hear things about, you know, it's in the small print. And, you know, we were one of the first companies to go down, it was, you know, the plain English route to remove any confusing language from terms and conditions, to make it very clear what is covered, what eventualities aren't covered, to enable choices to be made more easily by consumers. And to understand that, you know, not all solutions mean rolling a truck and spending $100 on getting a repair. There are, you know, that there are online solutions. We create a My Account functionality where customers can go on and self-help. They can watch, you know, a whole series of YouTube videos that we've put on their account that relate to the product they have with us, so that if they need to change a filter, they can do it themselves. Or if they need to, you know, check error codes, or if they just need to understand how to use the machine properly. Yeah, because sometimes the product hasn't failed, the consumer just doesn't know how to use it. So by making it, you know, a proactive approach and saying we're here to help you, whether the thing doesn't work or whether you're not using it correctly, actually you're creating this relationship, you're creating this constant use, you're creating the value that means they keep paying their $3 or $4 a month for as long as that they want to. So it is a big change. It's not just about fixing broken washing machines anymore.
No, I love it, and that makes total sense. It actually reminds me, we had another guest on from a major consumer electronic company that talks about kind of the youngest generation, the Gen Z. You know, one of their major, you know, attributes in terms of mentality is about authenticity, about, you know, how authentic of a relationship can you build with, you know, with them, right? And it's not just about, you know, kind of a sell it and forget it type of a scenario anymore. They want to see that whole kind of, you know, chain of custody, I guess, in terms of the ownership, the fact that they care about you throughout the entire journey, not to the point where they just sell you something and you just kind of go away. And I think what you talk about is definitely a reflection of that. That's why it just resonated with me as you were talking through that. So I definitely love that. And that makes total sense. So, Taj, there's a couple more things I wanted to cover here.
Sure.
To kind of, you know, finish up our conversation here. You know, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention COVID. I would love to get your thoughts and your perspective on, did you see any kind of a significant change in pre and post COVID, or has it just been an acceleration of what you think the major trends have been? Love to get your thoughts on that.
Yeah, there's a few things that have happened. Of course, like everyone else, we were really worried about what it meant for our finances early on in the process and our ability to look after consumers. Because if there was no money coming in, how are we going to service provide for the service? So the first thing we found was that because of our subscription model, people carried on paying their subscriptions. And that was a bit of a surprise, because with so many people under economic pressure at home, one of the first things that people do is they look at their list of direct debits, their monthly subscription service, and think, what can I do without? And we found, and it's what we believe, but this has now been proven to us, that our products and service falls into the kind of essential. I don't want to be without that. I'll cancel my gym membership. I might even cancel Disney Plus and my lawn mowing service, but I'm not going to cancel this because I need this. So that was really good. So it was proven to us what we all hoped was that our model was very robust and resilient, which meant our partners still earned revenue, we earned revenue, and we were able to deliver the service to our customers. Things have changed, but it's been a really strong period for us. But where it has changed is that shift from bricks and mortar type retailing to an online approach. And we work with both retailers and manufacturers, and both those businesses have changed in slightly different ways. And I think what's happened is that people who, so you talk about the Generation Z guys, but the generation before that, our parents, they probably didn't buy a lot of stuff online because there's a data trust issue, security, technology. So there's a whole series of people from all different generations that have made their first online purchases of major appliances in 2020 and found that it works very easily. So it has, to your point, it's accelerated the shift to more of an online base. Most retailers that I talk to across Europe don't anticipate it going back. Yes, there'll be a little bit of residual, back to bricks and mortar, but actually their online businesses are now set for growth. They're all being invested in, and it's the challenge that we have as well. How do we digitize the service and the experience for that generation and for that type of consumers we've done for the physical kind? For our manufacturers' programs, which are largely registration-based programs, our data volumes have gone through the roof because there are less face-to-face retail transactions with salespeople selling extended warranties. So there are more products being sold in the market that end up with no extended warranty at the point of sale. Because let's face it, extended warranties have to be sold. No one wakes up and says, I want to buy an extended warranty this morning.
Yeah.
So consumers are leaving stores without warranties because, again, if you're, leaving the online sales environment, because you have a much lower conversion of service contracts in a passive online way than you do in an active retail environment. So our post point of sale programs, which is how Domestic General have built our business, have been absolutely flying. So we've seen a shift. We've seen a shift to online. We've seen a shift to post point of sale away from bricks and mortar, and we see that trend continuing. As a business, we've learned a lot culturally as well. We're a relatively big business in Europe for what we do, but we have about 2,500 people. Within 11 days, we had 2,500 people remote working, including our call center agents. So it was a big shift and learning for us from going from a traditional environment to where no one can actually see their colleagues, and realizing that our people stepped up to deliver those promises was just incredible, because suddenly our people were even more, united around the mission that we had in what was essentially a minor sort of crisis for us as a nation and as a business. So it's been really eye-opening and thought-provoking how the market's changed, how our lives have changed. But actually, is the new norm is not too bad from our perspective.
Yeah, well, and I think it's more of a validation of your approach, right? In the end, because you position yourselves in a way where the consumer saw value coming from you in terms of those subscriptions. I just love that because it shows that a consumer, you know, they had to look at all their, you know, everyone had to look at all their expenses, yeah. Right? But you were providing enough value to them for them to understand that this is an essential thing that we need. And we're going to cut the Disney Pluses and the Netflixes before we cut our service plan on our washing machine. Cause, that makes total sense. And I'm very happy to hear that.
It was, we didn't drop a single point in our retention.
Oh, that's amazing.
And some programs went up, but yeah, across the piece, we didn't drop a single percentage point in terms of that retention piece, which again, so in with all that adversity, there were some real business model affirming things that happened that have just given us even more confidence to do what we're doing. And, you know, before we decided to come to the US, we did a whole load of research with, you know, consumers in the US about how they felt about the types of things that we do. And it was overwhelming, you know, that it was even stronger signals than we have in our home market in the UK. So we can't wait to get going.
Oh, no, it sounds like very exciting times for yourself. So, Taj, you know, really appreciate kind of your insight into all of this, really. Before last question before we kind of wrap up here is for a lot of our listeners, you know, some of them might be, you know, they're across the board, insurance companies, OEMs, you know, any number of different things. What's kind of the one piece of advice you'd give to leaders in this space that they should really be thinking about, or especially if they're trying to make this, I would say, a mental transition, right, to this concept of this loyalty model? What's the one piece of advice you'd give to our listeners out there?
I think they should probably give me a call. No, I'm joking. No, but they should give me a call anyway, obviously. But I think the serious answer is that think about what the mission of your business is. And how much of your operational activity is designed to meet the promise that you want to make. And I think what you find is that none of it joins up. That's a bit harsh. It won't all join up because they're not designed with the promise in mind. They're designed to fix certain issues and solutions. And I think the program we in our business, we call it customer first. And our CEO, he says, let's put the customer first. Everything else will work itself out. Yeah, it's a little bit, okay, it's not scientific, but it's a put the customer at the center of what you do. If you're a consumer-facing business, you should be doing that anyway. And build solutions that they value. But you have to ask them what they want, not just assume. We, as people who work in industry, we assume we know everything about it, but we know about it from one side of the fence. And I think it's really important that we listen to consumers.
No, that's great.
Does that make sense?
Absolutely love it. And yeah, of course, you know, if I don't think it was, you know, too flippant of you to say that you should probably give Taj a call if you do have any questions or interested in what Domestic in General is doing. So, all right, well, Taj, I think that's all the time we have for today. I really do appreciate your time. Love your perspective on everything, and you know, really hope and wish the best for yourself and your business, and especially your expansion out here to the States. Very much looking forward to your progress over the next few years here.
Thanks, Edwin. Really appreciate it. Great talking to you. Thank you.